Ooh, you and me go fishing in the dark, lying on our backs and counting the stars. We'll be staying the whole night through. Feels so good to record this podcast with you.
Aw, that was very sweet. Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymy Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, fish justice. Hello, and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Hello there, Ned. How do you do? tell me, what is new? That is a quote from esteemed poet and distinguished medical professional, Dr. Seuss. It's from his book, One Fish, Two Fish, Red Fish, Blue Fish.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about fish justice today. Yes. So I got this idea from listening to This Is Criminal with PB Judge over the summer. They did a really cool episode about cheating in fish tournaments. Did you hear that episode?
No, I missed that one. Mm. I've got a backlog of podcasts I have to catch up on, so I missed it.
Mm. Well, it aired over the summer, but it was like one of my favorite episodes in a long time. There were some really cool stuff in there. So like the opening story was about a fishing tournament in Lake Erie where these guys like stuffed lead sinkers and fillets of other fish down the like dead fish's mouth so they would weigh more and win the tournament.
Yeah.
And basically they'd been winning a lot of tournaments recently.
Yeah.
And the judges were suspicious anyway. They like cut the fish open and found that these guys had been like stuffing their fish to weigh more so they could win the tournament.
I just have to say also that we're recording this on 10:30, so tomorrow is Halloween. And in here you have Lake Erie as like eerie, spooky. We just drove by it on the way to Niagara. We go by Lake Erie. It only has one E. So I thought you were giving a shout out to Halloween with the two E Erie.
Nope, I just need to work on the spelling of my Great Lakes, I guess. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a spooky shout out there.
Nope, totally unintentional.
Okay.
But I don't want to like redo that episode, so we're not going to talk about cheating in fish tournaments. But just to kind of go back to that a little bit, fishing tournaments kind of offer like major high dollar prizes. So some of these people were winning like 100K or 300K.
That's a
like
good motivation to cheat.
A boat. Yeah. And most fishing tournaments, even across the U.S., make you take a polygraph test to deter cheating.
Who administers it?
I don't know, but like it's not just like a minor thing. Like it's a kind of a nationwide thing.
Okay, and, so this is very serious.
Yeah, super serious. The guys that had that got caught stuffing the fish, they had had to forfeit their prize in a previous tournament, the same people, because they failed their polygraph test.
So
there was already kind of like
suspicion on them. Yeah.
And they were criminally charged because in Ohio, cheating in a competition is illegal. It's a crime, which that was new information to me too.
Me too.
And if you can, if the potential gain from a competition is over $1,000, it's a felony to cheat in a competition.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So the cheaters in that case received a year of probation, $2,500 fine, and 10 days in jail for cheating in that. Yeah.
Very serious. Mm-hmm.
And there was another cool story where like some cheaters in a fishing tournament in Utah were busted by stable isotope analysis of the otoliths. Okay. And the otoliths are like little rock crystals that form in like fish's ears, although I don't think they have ears.
So but cute.
Yeah. But basically they kind of float around in there, and that's what gives fish their like stability, and they can keep upright in direction. And you can use stable isotopes, which I don't know exactly what those are. But
well, we have crystals in our ears too, by the way.
Well, I didn't know that either. But basically you can test these ear rocks in fish and tell what body of water they came from.
That's very cool.
So another cheating method is that a fisherman will like catch fish or buy fish from somewhere else and then put them in cages and drop them in the lake.
I mean, that's pretty smart.
And then just go scoop them up and and turn them in.
Unless they're following you around, how do they know?
Right, which is why you have to take polygraphs and why they metal detect, have like metal detector wands to go over the fish.
Yes.
But anyway, I really enjoyed that episode. So that's all we're going to talk about cheating in fishing tournaments.
Okay, good.
But do you like seafood?
Yes, I see food. I like seafood. I like seafood and I like to eat it.
You see food and you eat it.
Yes. No, I really like seafood.
Yeah, me too. So let's do a little seafood quiz.
Let's do it.
And I did keep it this time to true false.
Thank you.
So I did sadly capitulate and reduce my academic rigor. So we may have a little grade inflation.
Probably not. I'm brain dead, so I'm thinking that. But I'm going to guess. I'm just going to guess.
Okay. All right. Number one, when you order fish and chips at most restaurants, you're probably getting haddock or cod.
I think you want to get haddock or cod, but I think you're not getting haddock or cod. So I'm going to say false.
I've got another question about fish fraud. But assuming there is no fraud, that's actually true.
Oh, okay. So if it's not fish fraud, then it's haddock or cod. Okay.
Yeah. Most fried fish is haddock or cod. They're actually close relatives. They're white, flaky fish with both a firm and a tender texture, so they're perfect for frying. And
I thought this was going to be some like rando fried white fish that you think you're getting cod, but it's not actually cod.
As long as everything's above board, fried fish you would get would be haddock or cod.
Good to know.
All right, number two, fish farming or aquaculture produces about 30% of seafood globally.
I believe this is higher, so I'm going to say false.
You are correct.
Ding,
it's
ding.
Actually a little over half.
Yes.
So upwards of 50% of seafood is produced by fish farming.
Yes.
Or aquaculture, which is the breeding and rearing of aquatic organisms in a controlled environment for public, commercial, or recreational use. And you can use aquaculture for both saltwater and freshwater fish. All right, number three, the U.S. is the number one producer of seafood in the world.
False.
True. We know.
What?
Your fault is true.
Okay.
So you were right. The answer is false.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you should have said correct.
Right. Correct. Yeah. I should have said correct. Yeah. It's China by far.
Okay.
Followed by Indonesia.
Not surprising.
The U.S. is actually closer to number 10.
Yeah.
On the list of top seafood
producers. It's all of the fish product in the what I feed my cats. It's from like Thailand.
Yeah. And China produces well over half of its seafood by aquaculture. But they're still the largest fresh or wild caught fish producer also. And it's also estimated that China's basically overfished its own waters to depletion.
Yeah, not surprising.
Yeah. And there's currently a global controversy of illegal and unregulated fishing by Chinese fishing boats in restricted waters or in territorial waters of other countries, particularly off South America. So Peru is like number three, which I never would have guessed
that.
And China's kind of like encroaching on Peru's waters.
Maybe the orcas should go after them.
But I mean, their boats are like so massive, and these massive industrial commercial boats, it would take a huge pot of orcas to take down those. All right. Over 80% of all seafood in the U.S. is imported.
I'm going to say true.
That is correct. The U.S. has not largely caught up with aquaculture producing countries, and most of the seafood that we produce is still wild caught.
Yes. Do you think this is a land issue? Like, I mean, we do have the Great Lakes and...
Places
to put farms was what I was thinking. Because like in Norway, you know, the salmon fishing in nets, you know, that's basically fish farming, but it's out in the salt water, in the ocean.
I just think it hasn't caught on, and there's kind of like a, you know, myths and stigma about fish farming.
Gotcha.
So,
okay.
I mean, that's just my guess. I don't know for sure.
So far, I've gotten 3 out of 4 correct.
You're doing good.
Track. Yes.
All right. Number 5. When you buy fish at the grocery store, there's a high likelihood that the fish you think you are buying has been fraudulently mislabeled.
I'm going to say true.
Well, I would accept either answer.
It's a toss-up.
Yeah, we have no
idea. Don't know. It's the regulation issue. Yeah.
And this is referred to as fish fraud, which we'll talk about more in a minute. But studies have estimated that anywhere from 16 to 75% of fish is mislabeled. So it's like such a wide variation. I'll accept any answer.
Yeah. For fish behind the counter, you know, at the seafood counters where you can clearly see what the fish is, right?
Yeah.
Like if you know what that fish is, then obviously it's not going to be mislabeled. But if it's sliced and diced in packages, who knows?
Yeah, exactly. And the idea is that, you know, companies and fishing industries and retailers can sell a cheap fish yes. and market it as a more expensive fish.
Like dye salmon.
And make money for it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you may think you're buying grouper and paying the price for grouper, but it's actually just like catfish fillets.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And that's fish fraud. All right, Ian, I have one more bonus question for you.
Oh, no. Okay.
True or false? Okay. Captain D's is much better than Long John Silver's.
Oh, this is true. 100%.
Yeah, absolutely
100%.
True. I agree. I really want to go to Captain D's for lunch after we record this episode.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
There's not one around.
If you've never had both, then mm-hmm. you're missing out if you've only had Long John's, because Captain D's is far superior.
Agreed. When I grew up, the Captain D's back home had a buffet on the weekends.
Man.
And like it was a real treat after church. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Usually my grandmother cooked, and so we'd just go to her house after church, but like a real treat was like, we're all going to load up and go to the Captain D's buffet. And then we'd stuff ourselves and we'd come out like just dripping and sweating the grease from the Captain D's.
I lived next to one. Mm-hmm. I used to live next to one as a kid. Man. Briefly, but it was fun because I could just go buy some hush puppies and eat them.
Oh, yeah. I love their hush puppies.
Anywho.
All right. So as hinted in these questions, I do want to discuss briefly a few fish fairness fiascos.
I love your alliteration.
Oh, yeah, I've got several F alliterations going on here. So I want to talk about fish fraud, overfishing, and pollution from commercial fishing briefly individually.
Let's do it.
All right, so fish fraud, as I mentioned above, is when fish is deliberately mislabeled for economic or profit reasons. So basically, you're not buying what you think you're buying. Other varieties of fish fraud include like packing fish with ice. So sometimes fishermen will like pack the fish with ice so it weighs more.
Okay.
So you're buying like half fish and half ice, but paying for all fish.
Sneaky.
Or mislabeling the source or the method of production. So sometimes, you know, some fish fraud might be like, say, oh, this is wild caught salmon when actually it was farm raised.
Gotcha.
And it's possible, as you mentioned before, to do this fish fraud because once a fish is processed and filleted, it's very hard visually to tell what kind of fish it is.
Yes.
So it can be mislabeled and sold as a more expensive fish. And this is especially difficult for white types of fish. So like salmon is pretty easy to visually identify.
Right.
But if it's just like white fish meat, white fish fillet, it's practically impossible to identify visually, even for like fish experts. I don't know, what do you call it? Is that an ichthyologist? Is that someone who studies fish?
Maybe.
I don't know. That sounds right, but I could be wrong about that. But like another good example is red snapper, which is a really good, delicious fish. A lot of times may be swapped out for tilapia, which is still good, but it's kind of like a tier below and cheaper.
Yeah, you're paying for the red snapper, not the tilapia.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you avoid being the victim of fish fraud?
Well, you know, as we've kind of talked about, it's difficult to know even if you are being the...
You could buy the whole fish. Yeah. That's one way, right?
True. But there are some other suggestions. So like you said, you could buy less processed fish. Mm-hmm. It's harder to swap out if you, you know, have like the fins and the scales and the head and the eyeball still on the fish. Those are easy ways to, you know, to tell what kind of fish you are. So it's kind of like a murderer who cuts the hands and feet and head off victim because it's harder to identify.
Right.
Same thing with, you know, fish, the heads, fins, scales, color, things like that help you identify that. So you can buy less processed fish and it's easier to detect.
Yes.
You can also ask about the species or the place of origin of the fish you're buying, but this is also no guarantee because of like mislabeling and imports and stuff. So your grocery store may have been the victim before you. So, you know, it's not like your in some cases it may be, but like your grocery store is not in on it, maybe not in on it. They may have been the victim of fish fraud themselves. But be especially suspicious of fish that isn't clearly labeled or it clearly says where it came from.
Okay.
And then think about the price, which this wouldn't help me any because I'm terrible at like the price is right. I'm terrible at guessing the price of things.
I could never play that game. Yeah.
But if you're familiar with fish prices and a price sounds too good to be true, it probably is. It's probably fake.
Of course. Mm-hmm. So what is the government doing to stop fish fraud?
Well, since it's a global problem, we've talked about a lot of those on the podcast, it's hard to stop or enforce international regulations. But experts have argued that traceability can help prevent fish fraud. So traceability links data or information to the movement of items through the supply chain. So like marking it with barcodes and you can track it like you can track your Amazon package or whatever. federal regulations prevent, like, are supposed to prevent mishandling, and food safety regulations may have a part to play here. So, like, the FDA has jurisdiction, but given the scope of their work, they largely focus their attention on public health threats. So, fish fraud is not a big concern of the FDA.
Sure.
And food safety regulations may have something to say about adulteration, which, you know, some fish frauds will, like, put additives in their fish, like more salt to make it retain water and weigh more. In consumer protection laws, protect against, like, mishandling and can hold retailers accountable, but those are hard to enforce. So as a consumer, if you think you've been the victim of fish fraud, you know, it's like a major hassle to pursue this case for, like, you know, the price of a fish fillet. So just beware of the fish that you buy.
Yeah, buyer beware.
Caveat emptor. So that's fish fraud. Okay. Now let's talk about overfishing for a bit. So overfishing is when too much fish from a stock or a population or cult that the breeding population is too depleted to recover. So basically, overfishing, you catch more fish than they can make fish eggs and fish babies. So fishing boats are catching fish faster than the stocks can replenish. And the World Wildlife Fund, or WWF, estimates that currently 1/3 of the world's fisheries are overfished.
Yikes.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
But I have another bone to pick with the WWF. They made the World Wrestling Federation change its name to World Wrestling Entertainment in 2002.
Nice. Yeah. Okay, that explains. They never explained this. I watched that Netflix documentary, and they never explained the name change. So
I haven't watched it yet. It's on my list.
Like, there were different people who started it. Oh, there's all kinds of drama.
It's like 10 episodes
long. Yeah, it was good.
I'm going to watch it, But the World Wildlife Fund sued the WWF for their name.
Good.
So they
stop stealing people's name, especially somebody who's out to protect.
Exactly. Instead of bashing people over the head with metal folding chairs.
Right. Well, one guy dies and he gets dropped from. Anyway.
Was that a Hart Brothers or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, back to overfishing, not World Wrestling Entertainment.
WWE and WWF.
Yeah. So, like, vast commercial fishing enterprises cause a lot of overfishing and bycatching, which bycatching is a problem related to overfishing.
Right.
And that's when animals who are not the target of fishing get caught in nets and equipment.
Yes.
So you've got, like, these huge industrial fishing operations that have, like, nets and lines that are miles long.
Right.
And basically this is called bottom trawling. So they have, like, these huge mile-long nets, and they just drop it in the ocean and drag it across the ocean floor, and it just catches everything, like fish, birds, turtles, dolphins, whales. All kinds of things get caught in these nets and die.
Yes.
And that also destroys the ocean floor and ecosystems that it's dragged through. And then you also have long lining, which is basically, instead of a net, you just have, like, a long, long fishing line, and have, like, hundreds of thousands of hooks baited on these you know, long lines. And these are particularly harmful to turtles and sharks.
Great.
Yeah.
Other than wiping out marine life, why is overfishing bad?
Well, I mean, that's bad enough, but even though, you know, eating fish is delicious, overfishing is not good for the ocean. It wipes out fish population, and it can cause like food chain imbalance. So ultimately it reduces the chance that we can keep eating delicious seafood.
Yes.
And overfishing is majorly a problem that kind of stems from commercial industrial fishing, which can be bad for local fishermen and communities that live off local fishing. So you've got these big, massive industrial commercial fishing that, you know, kind of cut out the little guy, the local fisherman, and then, of course, the communities that live off of fish from the sea.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this before, and maybe it's a bit of exaggeration, but China's basically fished its own waters empty, and now they have to go elsewhere to get fish, and this is causing a lot of international problems, wiped out China's subsistence fishing communities in their waters, and they're encroaching in other countries' waters. So overfishing can basically take food out of people's mouths and wipe away coastal towns.
Yeah.
And also fish slavery exists also particularly in Southeast Asia.
Right.
So, you know, we talked about like the slavery and cyber butchering in, you know, like people can be, you know, kidnapped and human trafficked to work fishing boats as well.
There are also so many other problems that you wouldn't think about connected to wiping out subsistence fishing, like piracy, for example, off the coast of Somalia. Mm-hmm. These Somali communities that fished for a living, that way of life was destroyed by all of the big industrial ships going through.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's just connected to so
much.
So
what do you do? Become a pirate.
And then so the fishing nets also, we talked about that with the ocean trash.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now I feel guilty about eating Captain D's. Mm-hmm. I really want that food now. I think we do have one that's like maybe an hour and a half away or something. We're going to have to drive down there one day. No. Instead, we're going to, what are we going to do to stop overfishing?
Mm-hmm. Well, some people do advocate like eliminating seafood from our diet or cutting down on seafood because then that will drop the demand. But with responsible fishing and enforcing fish regulation, we can still like feed a global population with the fish. Like there are plenty of fish in the sea.
Yes.
It's the excessively wasteful, massive commercial industrial fishing that causes a problem. And again, this is a global issue with kind of very little recourse for enforcement.
Sure.
But in the U.S., NOAA, which stands for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, they monitor and enforce fishing in the U.S. In the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Conservation and Management Act, that's the U.S. law that regulates fisheries in federal waters. So NOAA kind of like monitors fish caught in the U.S. and manage that and limits catches from different stocks. And in 2023, NOAA reported that actually 94% of U.S. fish stocks are not overfished, which is an all-time high.
Okay.
So fish stocks in U.S. water are actually in pretty good shape, according to the NOAA report.
But that's not where our Captain D's golden fried fish is coming from.
That's true. 80% come from overseas.
Yeah.
And also a neat thing in 2023, NOAA released a plan to increase equity and environmental justice in its policy and practice, particularly focusing on underserved and marginalized communities that kind of have barriers to accessing these NOAA regulations. So you kind of have to like get licenses and then you have limits to your catch, and these things can be particularly burdensome for people who live in remote and rural locations and indigenous communities, and because of socioeconomic inequality and mistrust. So they at least have a plan to increase access and equity and environmental justice in that regard.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that seems pretty good.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah,
we'll see how successful it is. And the last thing that I want to talk about is pollution and environmental harm. So commercial fishing, you mentioned this earlier, is a major cause of ocean pollution and ocean trash, which is, we have a whole episode on trash.
Yeah.
So some of this is repeat information, but also that's a really good episode too.
Yeah, you should go back and listen to it.
Yeah.
It's early days for us because we're on like episode 50-ish. Mm-hmm.
I would call that our growing the beard episode.
Okay.
That's our grow the beard episode.
I like that term.
Do you know where that came from?
No.
It's a pop culture term.
Okay.
It's a film term. And it's actually the opposite of jumping the shark.
Ah.
So a show jumps the shark when it kind of like gets crazy and gets bad and goes off the rails.
Okay.
And that phrase actually came from Happy Days. Because there's an episode where like Fonzie is water skiing and he actually jumps over a shark.
Okay, yes.
So jumping the shark comes from Happy Days, and that means when the show kind of like goes off the rails and loses its. But growing the beard, and this is not just a term among Trekkies.
Yes.
But it refers to like when a show gets good, when it finds its footing and gets good.
Okay.
So Commander Riker between season one, he was clean shaven, and in season two, he had a beard.
Right.
And so growing the beard is a term that's like, okay, when the show gets good, opposite of jumping the shark. So ocean trash, I would say that's our growing the beard episode.
Nice.
But back to that, a lot of ocean trash comes from fishing, as we mentioned in that episode. 70 to 80% of ocean plastics are from fishing nets and gear, and 86% of the plastic in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is fishing nets.
That is so much.
Mm-hmm. And again, we're talking about like these nets that are like miles long.
Right.
They break, or when they, you know, become unusable, sometimes they're purposefully discarded, just like thrown overboard. And so this discarded gear is referred to as ghost gear. And obviously it contributes to pollution and plastic, but also it continues to catch and kill fish. And about 650,000 tons of commercial fishing gear is dumped in the ocean every year.
Yeah. And I'm just going to say that also we're not blaming the workers for this. This is a policy from these companies, right? So if they made it easier, if there was more incentive, if these people weren't trying to fish as much as possible to get paid as much as possible.
Yeah.
So it's a structural issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, in terms of like the environmental and ecosystem harm, there was a single incident off the coast of Mexico in 2018, 300 endangered sea turtles were found dead in a single discarded net, and 100 more were rescued, like pulled out of it alive.
Well,
but yeah, 300 dead sea turtles in one incident.
Yeah, that's awful.
And also pollution from fishing boats creates carbon emissions and can increase or worsen climate change. So particularly that bottom trawling technique that I mentioned early, apparently that takes like a lot of fuel and produces a lot of carbon emissions. And we've also talked repeatedly how climate change and environmental injustice is most heavily felt in poor countries and in poor communities.
Yes. So what do we do about all these seafood problems, about fish justice, other than regulations that we cannot enforce?
Yeah, fish justice is hard to say. I've caught myself doing fish,
fish justice.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, some people are advocating for greater regulation of industrial fishing, but also argue that fish farming or aquaculture may be a sustainable alternative to industrial or commercial fishing of wild populations.
Yes.
And there's a great deal of variety in fish farming or aquaculture, which that just kind of sounds more like distinguished and sophisticated.
Yeah.
Aquaculture. but aquaculture can be bad and harmful too.
Yes.
It has the potential to be sustainable if done properly and well-regulated, but it can also not be great. And the environmental impacts of aquaculture depend on how you feed your stock, basically, and what kind of stock you have.
Yeah.
So a lot of fish farms are fed by forage fish, like anchovies or sardines, that are caught by commercial fishing. So you're kind of like back to square one.
So
you've got your fish farm, but you have to feed your fish farm from
commercial fishing.
Fish. The ideal for sustainable aquaculture would be that a farm should produce more fish, as much or more fish, than is necessary to be caught from the wild to feed your farm.
Yeah.
And then we can also might think about like additives or microbes that kind of like make fish digestion more efficient and need less food. But then that kind of raises concerns about like food additives and chemicals in our food.
Right. So salmon farming. Mm-hmm. Fish farming, big in Norway, right? Mm-hmm. I knew someone who studied, I think it was a fungus that the salmon in the fish farms were developing that was killing them.
Mm-hmm.
But also on a list of the top 10 foods, a chef, and these were famous chefs, Michelin star chefs, top 10 foods that they wouldn't eat, salmon was like close to the top. So, speaking of that, aren't fish farms supposed to be dirty and unclean?
I mean, they definitely have that reputation and myth. So, like you said, wild caught salmon is supposed to be better than farm raised, and farm raised salmon, you know, the image is like small, dirty, algae covered ponds with overcrowded and polluted, and they're fed chemicals. So, that would be an example of aquaculture that's not so sustainable.
Right.
But aquaculture can also include like offshore pens. It doesn't just have to be like inland dirty ponds, but you can have like nets and pens in the open ocean.
Or yeah, that's what Norway
on
has
the shore.
In the fjords. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can see them on the boats. You can see all the fish like pens.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
But shellfish particularly are actually super easy to farm.
Oh, okay.
And they're very sustainable. And oysters are my favorite seafood. Yeah. I love raw oysters. I love fried oysters. I would take an oyster over a fish any day.
I got really sick off of mussel, and so I'm always skeptical about I like oysters, but you know, after getting really sick off of one, you're...
I can see that. But I mean, I like oysters. Like even better than like clams and mussels. There's just something about oysters that's particularly attractive to me. But, you know, oysters are super easy and good for the environment to farm because they don't require any additional feeding.
Right.
So they draw their nutrients straight from the ocean current, so they don't place any additional burden on the environment. So shellfish farming is a good, sustainable thing.
Okay.
But as with anything, aquaculture could also be susceptible to, like, monopolies by big corporations dominating the aquaculture process. And this could be especially problem for, like, offshore aquaculture, which still requires, like, boats and specialized resources, and that could be, like, big factory farming offshore and pens. And one of the problems related to that, you mentioned, like, you could see the salmon offshore, is that sometimes, like, species can escape from the pens. It's like if there are holes in the nets.
Make a run for it, yeah, Frank. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then that can be bad because a lot of these are like invasive species that can like throw the ecosystem out of balance.
Who can blame them for trying to escape?
Yeah, for sure. Fly free, little fish. But, you know, some forms of aquaculture do have the potential to be quite sustainable.
Yes.
And we're not really talking hypotheticals here because, like I said, over half of the world's seafood already is from aquaculture. And China produces more seafood from aquaculture than wild catching a fish.
Yeah, not surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's the big fish farming finale for our episode. Got anything else you want to say about fish justice?
I don't.
All right. Well, then let's wrap it up with our minute to spin it, where we give our takeaway from our episode. So, Tommy, what's your spin in just a minute?
So today my spin is just this. Mm-hmm. I would happily eat at Captain D's like once every 3 years if it meant more sustainable fish farming. I would give up how often I eat seafood in order to support ethical practices and sustainable practices. Mm-hmm. We weren't, unless we live by the ocean where we fish for our meals, we weren't inland meant to eat fish every day.
Yeah.
So how about we think a little bit more about fish justice?
Well, I've got that in the bag because it has been many years since I've eaten at Captain D's.
It's right, because we don't have one. We don't even have a Long John's. It closed. There
I know.
Was one in town.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, what's your spin?
I'm going to take you to a special place that nobody knows. Baby, get ready. Ooh, you and me go fishing in the dark. Lying on our backs and counting the stars. We'll be staying the whole night through. Feels so good to record this podcast with you.
Aw, that was very sweet. I wondered where that was going, where the fish reference was going to be. Yeah. Now I get it. I get it.
Fishing in the dark. So I love fish. You love fish. And with proper regulation and sustainable practices, we can avoid being the victims of fish fraud, and we can protect the ocean and its inhabitants, all the while continuing to feast on fine and fancy, fantastic fish.
And oysters. We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries. If you listen this far, reach out. Check out our website, linked in the show notes, to see how you can support our educational programming, and maybe we'll send you a t-shirt.